Welcome to the Adam Adam Podcast 68, a podcast for IT professionals. Hi, I'm Al.
I'm John.
I'm Jerry.
And I'm Dave.
Hooray, we've got Dave on the podcast.
We're
all in together at the same place at Odd Camp. So
we should probably mention that seeing as Dave is on the podcast, he therefore, I don't think he can be the producer. So,
no, I won't.
So we're
going
to have to get somebody else to produce it for us.
Yeah.
That would be, we are ably assisted, seeing as the producer never speaks, we're ably assisted by the wonderful, amazing Joe Ressington, who's lending us his recording gear. So thank you very, very much, sir.
Hey.
And he turned up in the nick of time today in order to help us record. So thanks very much, Joe.
Thank you very much.
So how's Old Camp been so far for you guys? Because I only managed to turn up today.
Today being Sunday.
So we're recording this on Sunday. In case anyone is new to the podcast, this isn't a normal one for us. We normally we record in a slightly different environment. And if you are new to the podcast, you won't realise that I'm one of the organisers of Odd Camp. So this is my second year organising Odd Camp. This year, for the second year running, Jerry has ably assisted with the crew. So thank you very much.
I managed to stay here both days this time rather than having to run off in the morning of the first day. So it's been really good. I've been on the crew. I've been on the merch stand with Mark Johnson from the Ubuntu podcast. So I haven't seen many talks. So it's been a bit different in that respect. But I have talked to lots of people. So rather than people talking to me, it's been more of a two-way thing this year. So it's been good.
I've seen a number of talks, one which is quite good. The one about the load balancer 101.
That was really good. Yeah.
Really good. I want to go and try that now. Having a go at building my own one, because I'm using it in a corporate environment. We use a Netscaler. Another one was about the plumbing one. From Mark. Yeah, it was really good.
my favourite one was so I went to see the one from Ben from the Matrix Project. So obviously I'm quite aware of the Matrix Project, and I saw the talk by Matt Hodgson last year. It was really good to kind of have a different person from inside the project here talking about it this time, kind of telling about what's changed in the last year.
You could tell it's a really busy project, and he's very happy to be working on that project.
Absolutely. It was a very, very good, very good talk from him. I saw Lorna Jane who's been on his sort of conference speaker. She was talking about how she creates her presentation materials and documentation using RST, restructured text, using a restructured text to PDF format. But we don't normally talk to Dave. So Dave, what have you seen?
So I've been doing crewing of my own this year with the entirety of my family being here. So to be fair, I've actually not done much in the way of sessions. This time around. This is only my second Odd Camp. I went to Oxford in 2014. And so the only sessions that I've really done are the opening and closing sessions, and the talk that Kat did yesterday regarding technical cooperatives,
yep,
which was really interesting. And the talk just before lunch today about morality and ethics in development, which I found really interesting. I'm not a developer, but I work very closely with a team of developers.
Yeah.
So I was taking photographs of the screen and sending them to their Telegram channel so they could see what was going on. But to be honest, because we've been traipsing the kids around at the same time, I spent quite a bit of time up in the Coda Dojo.
Yeah.
Where yesterday, most of the kids were spending their time learning Python and hacking around with Raspberry Pi hats and lights and stuff. But then it just turned out into we can go and play Minecraft now, can't we, Daddy? we went up there this morning, and I actually spent some time learning Python myself.
Oh, awesome.
While I was up there this morning waiting for Caroline to come out of her group. So for me, I mean, it's not about the sessions for me. It's about coming here and meeting people I haven't seen before, like Jerry and Al, who I've spoken to but never never met. So it's the networking thing.
Yeah, I like it how like you haven't seen people for a whole year and you just start chatting to them like you only saw them like yesterday kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's that, I think that so that that's quite a large part of the reason why I got involved in organising it, to be fair, is because I've spent quite a few years coming to these things and right from the, because obviously it formed out of the Lug Radio Live days. And so you tend to get the same sort of groups of people coming year on year. But actually, one thing that obviously you missed yesterday, Al, but we had a live recording on of a few different podcasters on stage yesterday. And a question was asked, sort of, how many people, was it their first Odd Camp? And the number of people that put their hands up to that was stunning. I mean, it was fantastic. For me as an organizer, that's brilliant because it still has the same vibe. It still feels exactly the same. I'm still catching up with people that I haven't seen before. And yet, there's a whole new group of people that have never been to this before. And quite a few people have come to me and said, I've really enjoyed this and I'm going to come again. And that's, as an organizer, that, I mean, I'm just talking about it. I'm getting like goosebumps off the back of that one. So that's really cool. I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, it's nice. It's been a really relaxed atmosphere, I found, this year. You're saying yourself that in terms of organisation, it's really relaxed for you as well.
Yeah, it really has been. So last year was quite stressful for me because it was the first time I'd done it, and we had a few technical issues on the first day, and so that kind of, it didn't mar the event, but it made it more difficult for me to kind of relax and sort of go with the flow on it. But this year, yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know whether it's the venue or the people or the fact we've got the,
it's a fairly good helping of luck, I think, as well. I was talking to Mark. He was saying that if anything's going to happen, it's going to happen on Saturday morning. So
yeah.
And I was saying, don't jinx it, man. Don't jinx it. but he said, no, it should be fine now. So
yeah, I mean, it's... So pretty much, I think... Anyway, I've waffled on quite a bit about outcome and have done for the last sort of 6 months of the podcast, so...
I was going to ask Jerry from a crewing perspective.
Yeah.
Because I think... John, you're more than just crew because you're going to be running around after people, make sure everything's kind of running as smoothly as it should be. But from a crewing perspective, how different is it as a crew member than it is as a delegate?
I think you've always got a thing when you go somewhere that you've never been before with people that you've never met before. You're sort of overcoming shyness to talk to people and things, whereas as a crew member, people come up and talk to you. Mm. So that's different. Being on the merch stand, you're having conversations with people all the time. So it's quite different in that way. Obviously, I haven't been to as many of the talks, which is that's okay because you're still interacting with people, learning about things that they happen to be talking to you about. So
have there been any talks that you would have wanted to have gone to but couldn't because
I was quite interested in that Linux load balancer one, but I have been, you know, it's been two people on the stand, so I could have gone at any time, but you don't want to go to too many sort of thing. Mark's actually written a couple. He did a lightning talk yesterday and a talk today, and he wrote those while on the stand, so as usual I'm slacking. Yeah.
I'm saying nothing, not a word at all.
So one thing I wanted to bring up, which was heard in another podcast kind of out, was about worrying about what you should learn worrying about what should you learn. Because like today, whenever you go to these events, you always think, oh yes, I want to look into that, like load balancer thing. Is what? How do you decide what you should focus on to... for your career, because as you know, I'm mainly Windows and VMware kind of thing. But and I think we said on the Telegram group this week, is like you always get kind of whatever you are good at, people kind of latch onto. Like I've been doing SharePoint, and now everyone comes to me for the SharePoint question. And I knew nothing about SharePoint 6 months ago, but I do.
The same thing happened to me. Don't worry about it.
So how do you? And myself, I sometimes overthink about what should I learn, but then I think to myself, we're never ever going to be able to learn everything you should do. But what do you think you should focus on?
I mean, for me, it's what interests you and what people are willing to pay you to do. I mean, as a contractor, I kind of go by what it looks like people need and what seems interesting. So at the moment for me, that's Kubernetes, which I've still, I would say, I've got a lot to learn, but I'm familiar with it, with at least the basics of it. But with anything, you have to use it day to day to, like for me, I have to use it day to day to get it into my head. And so, I mean, this fairly frustrating at work that there's a Kubernetes project which I'm not involved in. I'm doing low level hardware stuff, which is, it's good because it's skills that I already have, but it's kind of, I wish I was working on that bit of technology instead sometimes. But yeah, how about anyone else?
Well, where I'm working at the moment, at the moment I have been for the last 24 years, but never mind. We last year we moved all of our product infrastructure into Azure. And it basically turned out that wasn't the right move to make because the costs have just escalated and spiraled out of control. The business as a whole, the global business, has just adopted OpenShift as a containerization platform. And we are now looking at the options that we have, both from an application and also a persistence perspective of, you know, how we can utilize this platform to get back into the company fold in using the company's architecture rather than a third party's. Mm. Now, as far as containerizations is concerned, it's something I've never touched. It's something I've never been involved in. I'm aware that I'm using it daily because the technology around me uses it. But from as a non-developer, as a database user, a database administrator, I'm completely clueless as to what options are available to me within the containerization platform that exists. So I'm on the outside trying desperately to get in.
Mm. As I understand it, OpenShift is basically Red Hat's kind of fork of Kubernetes or something.
Yeah,
or something,
yeah, essentially so, yes.
Yeah.
But again, we come and grace it all the time at work. The cloud, yes, it's good, but it's not cheap. People think it's cheap, but it's not. Accountants like it because they can say, oh yeah, we're spending this amount of money. But it's just expensive because all the time I'm getting asked to do proposals to say, oh, I want to move my my small business server, my Exchange server into the cloud or whatever. But you move it into the cloud, into Azure, you've got to double up everything because you can't have it as a single point of failure. Mm-hmm. Because you can't have a file server sitting on one Azure. I can't think what the word is, but you have to have the model. You have to have double everything. Mm. And it's not easy to do.
I think using something like Kubernetes or OpenShift, you can basically take your configuration and put it on bare metal or put it on Azure or put it on AWS.
Yes.
That's the allure of it.
But where I come from is like a file server or an email server or something, or an application engine. Mm. It's not designed to sit in the cloud.
No.
You can do it, but it's having that failover.
This is one of the reasons why our cloud, shifting to the cloud, I'm not going to say it failed because it worked really well, but in terms of cost-wise, is you're not just replacing like for like. You're not just doubling up like for like. When you move into an Azure environment, you then have to consider all the support network that goes around it. So we built up, I think it's 5 different environments within Azure, one for prod, one for UAT, one for QA, one for automation, one for CI. But then you've got Active Directory servers, so domain controllers. You've got mail servers. You've got all this other stuff that we've taken for granted is already existing within our internal infrastructure.
Yeah.
We're now having to replicate externally. So we've gone from having direct control of somewhere in the region of 15 Blade servers to upwards of 70, 80 Azure VMs. Because a lot of what we had is now not available to us because it was part of our internal infrastructure. Yeah.
So working for an SI, a solutions integrator, my job's kind of a bit odd in that we kind of get asked by our customers to deliver a service that may kind of have a particular requirement, or they might say, "Oh, you know, we want to." They might specify, "You know, we're gonna go AWS, we're gonna go Azure, or whatever, whichever product it might be." And what we're tending to find is that they think that they can just, you know, if walk up with a virtual disk full of, you know, of servers, and then it will just magically appear in the cloud, and it will just work in exactly the same way. It's just we're paying for it in a different way, and they really just don't. And I don't know how much of that is because we're working with companies that have always been infrastructure-led businesses, and really the cloud model only really works if you're prepared to also migrate your environment as it goes. And most of our customers, I'm seeing things from a very, very tiny perspective in the grand scheme of things, because again, working for a solution integrator, you're never dealing with the salespeople. You're never dealing with the customer. You've always got like six layers of abstraction between you and whoever it was that actually signed the bit of paper that said, we're going to deliver this project. So, I mean, it might be, I'm, you know, completely missing the trick here, but it definitely feels like a lot of them are saying, can you please just shift 25 boxes from our data center into the cloud?
It's just not that simple. It's not that straightforward.
No, absolutely not. But you were saying before about, you know, how should you choose what to focus on? Jerry's exactly right. You know, it's taking the thing that you enjoy doing, or the thing that you are comfortable doing. It's probably better, because some of us work to live, and some of us live to work. Personally, I tend to veer more towards the enjoying my job so much that if I wasn't doing it as a job, I'd probably be doing it as a hobby anyway.
Yeah.
So the stuff that I'm doing, I'm very fortunate in that I get to do the stuff that I love on a day-to-day basis. I mean, this kind of came up loosely in the conversation we were having yesterday about, you know, and again, you're looking at me kind of blankly, Al, but, you know, on the podcast we recorded yesterday, we were talking about, you know, people saying, oh, you know, I work for the man and therefore I have to use Windows. Well, actually, it's a convenient way of saying my day job requires me to do something that I'm not necessarily 100% comfortable with doing, but actually it pays the bills and it works for my way of life. Would that be a fair way of saying it?
Yeah, that is fair, I think. But there's also the much more simplistic view is that you enjoy it. And I understand the ethical side of things, and, you know, using Microsoft products, using proprietary products. But yeah, you've got an option. You've got options that you can take to get out of that situation. But it might just be as simple as, I don't want to get out of that situation.
Yeah.
I've been working for that company for 24 years. I've been through a polarized version of a variety of jobs while I've been there.
Yeah.
I'm now in a job that I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. I have expertise in what I'm doing. Yes, I could walk away and say, right, I'm going to start concentrating on more of the freedom-friendly applications and systems and move away from proprietary.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, I'm probably comfortable.
So
that might be part of the problem.
I mean, I found I was at one place for nearly 10 years, and then it was a combination of, you know, not being particularly happy in that job and seeing all this other technology almost passing me by, because the only if I can only use it in an amateur capacity, you don't really get to play with the, you know, big bits of infrastructure. So, and
I mean, I guess that, and again, I'm bringing it back to the question about what should you focus on. You know, are you here as an attendee of this conference to learn about the stuff you do at work? If so, that's the stuff you want to focus on at the conference. Are you here to learn about the stuff that you want to use at home? In which case, you should be at the talks that are talking about the stuff you want to learn, use at home. Or are you here to see talks about stuff that you would never, ever go anywhere near to determine whether or actually, maybe... okay, let's take a metaphorical
random Joe Alan from the public, you know, a random Alan from the public who's been going and doing a job, working for the, in quotes, the man, got a comfortable job, happy with what he's doing, spent 10 years, 15 years, 100 years, whatever, doing that job, and he's happy doing that job, goes to a conference, walks into a talk, and his life turns around.
Oh, absolutely.
So should he be at a talk? Should he have instead gone in a talk on something that he knows like 30% about and wants to know 50% about? Because with all the will in the world, most of the talks that are here are not necessarily, I'm going to explain to you the intricacies of working with Microsoft SharePoint 2016, R2, standing up from a stand, from, you know, using a specific SQL server? Or are they going to be there saying, I know something about SharePoint and I want to tell you about it?
Yeah, because it is basically about knowledge sharing. This isn't a training delegation that we're attending.
Collaboration
here.
Culture, it comes back again.
But at the same time, I never expected to come here and see on the planner of somebody discussing their plumbing. Not their personal plumbing. But
yeah, I was going to say.
But knowing that it was Mark and having him just having had a new bathroom put in, I can kind of see where it's coming from. But yeah.
So I was, obviously, as an organizer here, I spent a while kind of organizing the call for papers. This first year we did a call for papers. So whereas in the past I would have perhaps gone out and solicited specific people to come and speak at the conference, this year I threw it open and said, whoever wants to come and talk, come and talk. And the number of people that have said to me, it's really odd, we've had more technical talks this year than before.
Maybe if you're responding to a call for papers, you've got a tech talk that you may have done elsewhere. I mean, I'm thinking, yeah, like the very first one was automated testing, infrastructure testing, which I know quite a lot about. And actually, to go back to the earlier point, I didn't find the talk particularly enlightening because I already had the knowledge. So in that respect, you should probably go to talks stuff that you... that seems interesting that you don't know much about.
But even though you can still pick up on things in subjects that you know about, there may be this one item that you take away and think, you know, that was really worth going to.
Yeah.
And the other thing as well for me, and I don't know if this is just because of the kind of person that I am, if I've gone to talk about something that I know 50% about, and the guy that's talking about that covers the same ground that I know about, one of the things that you take away from that is, actually, you know what? If I hit a problem with that problem area, that then means that I at least know the name to be able to message him and say, do you know what? Have you, especially in a conference like this, which is all about sharing and kind of helping other people.
Networking.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, work brain switched on for a second there. That's why I blanked you. It's about finding out who else is there. Because if they say, for example, you know, somebody in the audience that speaks about something at the social afterwards or in the corridor outside afterwards, I'll go up and say, that was a really good point you made there. I'm John. What's your name?
Exactly. Click.
Yeah.
But when you come into an event like this one, it's you're not coming here for the content. Because 66% of the content has not been decided yet. And it's not until you start...
Very precise.
Well, 60.67 has not been decided yet. It's not until you start... You go through the days that there are subjects popping up, and of course you can always contribute your own, that you may or may not be interested in.
Yeah.
And actually, case in point, I'm going to say this. I wasn't going to, but I'm going to say this. In the podcast recording yesterday, I made a revelation about my intimate relationship with Google, and it got into the whole thing about, you know, it's not that difficult a task to get rid of Google, to come out and become purely open. So imagine my delight when there was a session put on for today called De-Googlifying with Nextcloud. But being the loyal Abinab in person than I am, I actually chose to come here to this session rather than the de-Googlifying one that is actually happening at this moment in time.
So what you're saying upstairs. Is when you get home, you're going to be swapping out any Amazon Alexas that are in your house with Google Homes, and you're going to fully embrace the lifestyle.
It's funny because we're up in the Coda Dojo this morning, and Caroline said to me, I said to Caroline that I'm thinking, I was talking with Yannick about all the Raspberry Pis we've got, and I've got one Raspberry Pi in the AIY project voice kit, which was effectively the Google Assistant made out of cardboard. And I said, what I was going to do is replace that with a Google Home. And she said to me, you were talking yesterday about de-Googlifying and you're going to go and buy a Google Home, which she then posted on Twitter. She then posted it in the OddCamp Telegram group. And yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. The whole idea of coming out of the infrastructure in which you're in. Don't know.
So going back to about my original questions about I think it's just doing what you do, what you like doing. I mean, I was so many years doing the technical support side of thing, first, second, third line support, and I moved on to doing my project side of thing. I think it's just you just focus on what you enjoy doing. If I wouldn't enjoy my job, I'll be looking for something else.
I think there's it's like a graph that crosses, and at that point where it crosses.
And the good thing about me and my job is that it's good, really good work life balance with having a young family. If I didn't have the family, I'd probably be different on a different path as it is, I think. And I think the good thing about coming to these events is that I don't work with open source that much, but it does get me in there, because if something does happen, if I lose my job or something, it's something I would want to move into, kind of thing. So and I think you just don't have, and what the original podcast, what I heard about it, is don't worry about what you think. You can't learn everything, and I think that's what I have to admit. I have to kind of learn it. You can't learn everything. And I think
being good at learning, quick at learning things, or just to pick up the basics or something.
That's what I normally do. I just pick up so many little things. I don't like seem to focus on something. Like I pick up SharePoint and learn it, and then move on to something else. Is a problem I have is if you go and see a client, and the client expects you to learn it, know everything, but you don't. Sometimes don't. So just making sure that you have that if they ask something, that you have a response to talk to you. And I always have a response to saying, like, that's a really good question. Let me think about it, and I'll get back to you about it.
Yeah, that's what Google's for. Done it again.
I think it's just me being prepared for that kind of situation.
So I, really early on in my career, in the team that I used to be in, I was sent out on a job to a customer site, and I basically spent 2 weeks doing effectively stuff. I knew the concept behind the what I was there to do, but I had never done the specific piece they'd asked me to do. Rocked up, and effectively I spent the best part of that engagement saying, I need to have a think about that one and I will get back to you, and then kind of turn away. Right, okay. I think if we try this, we can use that to determine where we go next with this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I think if you prove to it to your manager whether you actually you're willing to learn. I mean, I know I work with people. If you give them a job and they're just like, why am I looking at that? Why did you give me that job to look at? I'll always take everything as a job or something, a challenge to complete.
I think something that I maybe didn't realise until recently is that people are just looking for technical solutions to their business needs, and what you can provide those solutions or you can not provide those solutions, even to the point of hiring a subcontractor in my case to do something I just didn't have time to learn or whatever. So keeping that in mind and what, you know, the sort of end client is expecting is quite important, I think.
Right. So I think any of us is coming to half an hour for our little slot.
That's perfect. Yeah. Perfect timing. Yeah. Thank you very much, producer Joe, for keeping us to time.
Thanks, Joe.
Very good of you. So I think I want to take a quick moment to thank Dave for appearing on this podcast, you know, don't forget everything else. No, for
I must have my way in. No one wanted me here.
Well, you know, the restraining order's in the post, mate. No, I want to thank you for the work you've done since I joined the podcast in keeping us actually sound somewhere vaguely close to being sensible, you know, and cutting out our cruft. I finally stumbled that one out.
That could have gone badly wrong.
That could have gone, yeah, especially with children around. Yeah. So thank you very, very much for your
it's been assistance. My pleasure. It's been very much an education, and for me, as a producer rather than as a podcast producer, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Producing someone else's material rather than my own. Mm. So it's good. It's good.
So yeah. And okay. I also want to thank Joe for stepping in and providing the gear for us to record this.
And giving me a day off.
Cheers, mate. Cool. So I think that might be about it, guys. Yeah. What do you reckon?
Yeah. Speak to you soon, guys.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.